and welcome back to Cangri, home of Canada's queer media. My name is Luke Smith.
I am Sebastian.
And we had a bit of a hiatus. I was on vacation, and it was wonderful. It was a staycation.
You had a hiatus.
I had a hiatus. Yes, yeah, that's okay. Yeah. Woke up, then we're going to a haunted village with no village.
Okay, and there's...
There's just one house. It's a haunted house with no ghosts. We later go to a waterfall.
Was there a restaurant?
With no water. It was a really great day, actually. I think it was like Ruthburg or something, Ontario.
Okay.
Or Ruth, Ontario.
Ruth, that's the name of the place. Ruth is not a weird name for a city. Just look at a map of Newfoundland and you'll get a ton of weird names. My favorite is still Jobat's Arm. What did Jobat do?
I think it's... Isn't it Alberta? It's... Buffalo drop off cliff.
Oh, head smashed in buffalo jump?
That's the one.
That's named after a historical event.
Where they all smashed the head up jumping off a cliff?
No, the buffalo smashed in the head of a kid who was at the bottom of the cliff.
Oh. Yeah.
He wanted to see what it looked like.
Oh.
So it's actually sort of a local cautionary tale about not being a fool.
We went to the Devil's Punch Bowl, which you would know was in Hamilton.
That's in Hamilton, yes.
And there was no water or devil or punch. It was just, a thoroughly disappointing day.
The Devil's Punch Bowl Falls rarely dries out.
Oh, there was not a single drop of water. I even got a water bottle and spritzed it over the edge. I couldn't reach.
Did you go to Scenic Falls? Or Balls Falls? Or Webster's Falls? Or did you go to Upper West Fifth Falls? Did you go to the Devil's Falls? There's a lot of waterfalls in Hamilton.
Well, if the Devil's Punch Bowl Falls... had no water.
Yeah.
We're like, we'll go to Niagara, and it's a pretty safe bet they have water.
Well, Webster's
I've never heard of a waterfall without water before. I was like, this is madness.
There was a year in the 1800s, I don't remember when, it was like 1870, blah, 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 or something, when Niagara Falls did run dry. It can happen. It can happen.
That's a lie. I have no belief. Good time family visiting, so that was why. So yeah, nice to be back.
When I lived in Japan and I was dating my now ex, we lived at opposite ends of the country, so our dates, that's between quotation marks, was us going away for the entire weekend to some city that was between the two of us. And we spent a weekend in Nagoya, and I can say for certain that Nagoya is the most boring place I have ever been in my entire life. They basically, at around 6 p.m., somebody with a broom came out and like swept you off the sidewalks so that they could roll up the entire city and put it in the closet until 8 a.m. It was,
oh my God.
It was just everything was dead. We wanted to find a restaurant, couldn't find a sushi place. And to bear in mind, like, here we think of sushi as being fancy, but in Japan, sushi is what you drink
after... It's like a McDonald's or something.
It's a late night, you're already drunk, and you know that you're in that state where you're like, if I don't eat something, I'm gonna throw up.
It's like the Japanese shawarma.
It is. That's exactly what it is. It's basically like, if you ever seen My Drunk Kitchen, you get that drunk, and then you're like, it's time to cook! You make sushi. And a lot of sushi places don't open until like 9 p.m. Couldn't find a sushi place when we were in Nagoya.
Oh my God.
It was heartbreaking.
Well, let us know what was your worst staycation. Tweet us at @TalkCanQueer or find us on Facebook. We'd love to know. So on that completely not remotely gay in any way beginning to the show, but we're going to move on to some news. Synthetic chemical pollutants.
Okay.
Make people gay.
Uh-huh.
According to vegans.
According
to vegans.
Okay, so normally when you hear about chemicals turning people gay, you get those weird, like, American political commentators who think that the word soy boy is meaningful. And it's normally they're talking about how soy is making everyone gay and it's a feminizing the men. But a vegan should not be talking about foods.
It was a post on a British vegan group.
I mean, to be clear, we're making fun of them either way.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, good.
Yeah. And apparently it was this vegan who was a YouTube star, Mary Lopez. They were referring to the fact that this isn't the first time vegans have thought meat make people gay.
Okay.
It was definitely the sausage, if you catch my drift. But apparently, Mary Lopez had claimed that veganism had cured her homosexuality and cancer
Okay.
shortly before dying of cancer.
Okay.
So, yet to see the evidence on that one. But, yeah, no, apparently it's an actual thing. It was a Welsh group from Pembrokeshire said that synthetic chemicals cause sexual development problems.
Okay.
I mean, that's the first warning. I mean, calling homosexuality a problem.
Strictly now, speaking,
biochemical things do interfere with,
yeah,
you know, your biology and so on and so forth. I mean, that's true.
It's not impossible. But yeah, no. It's one of those things where every so often people start talking like this and it's a little... and then you actually find out that they actually have been referring to science. They just had no idea what they were talking about. They didn't understand the science they were reading. It's probably just something like, I mean, there is a relationship between eating meat as a child and then health as an adult. Because, like, you need a lot of iron and you need a lot of calcium to grow, and it's hard to get that from vegetables. And they also, like, there's this thing that if you're gonna raise your child vegan, they should eat dairy and meat until they're, I think it's 8 or 9 or something like that. Like, there's an age where if you don't feed them an omnivorous diet before that point, they will die of malnutrition or they'll be really sick or something.
Well,
but, you know, grapefruits, pucker juice.
Absolutely. We have discovered a whole string of studies and statements that
yes,
we're going to look at, because some of them are like, apparently, straight people
mm-hmm.
have more satisfying sex. Bearing in mind, and this is always like, headline, straight people have better intercourse, and you're like, oh, wow, is that really a thing? I mean, I'm sure that all of the straight people would be like, well, yeah, obviously.
Uh-huh.
But this was a study of white college kids,
okay,
because nearly all studies are white college kids. And what they pinned it down to was internalized homophobia, difficulty finding sexual partners, you know, actual outside people homophobia, and all of these things concocted into just not as great a time at a great time than the heterosexual
yeah,
counterparts.
All the bad sex I've ever had in my life, which is, I'm not going to lie, an unfortunate chunk of it,
mm-hmm,
has been with people who should have left their insecurities at home. I have spoken to quite a few gay men, and bearing in mind I used to work in the bar,
mm-hmm,
and in the gay bar, the place that I worked at, most of the people there were in their 50s and 60s, and quite a few of them said that their sex life didn't begin until their 40s. And I was like, oh, that's depressing. And they're like, eh, well, you know, would you rather peak early and be disappointed for the rest of your life?
True.
And I mean, that's... oh, that's the life of a gymnast, you know? You peak at 18, you're on the world stage, you get your gold medal, and now it's like, oh, but you're 20 now, and your knees aren't as good as you were when you were 16, and like, ooh.
I think that's the all top-level sports. By the time you hit 25, sorry, off you go.
It depends. Some sport, like fencing, people usually peak in their late 30s, because it's more about technique. There you go. But anyway, yeah, no, they're saying that it's usually in the 40s, and it's usually because it's around then that you actually learn how much just doesn't matter.
Mm-hmm.
So just, like, take your stuff off and put your stuff on their stuff, and then it's all good. And then
what does matter,
right,
is communication, communication, well, yeah, communication. We keep talking about it on our show. Whenever something goes awry,
yeah,
it's usually a communication issue.
Yeah, and then sometimes you think they're communicating and they're like, oh, whatever you want is fine. That is code for this is not going to be fun for you. So, I mean, just because they're opening their mouths and words are coming out doesn't mean they're communicating either, because sometimes, you know, the communication isn't so hot and they're telling you that they like what's going on. But
now that we've muddied that water.
Read their body language and you're like, I don't, like, your face and your words are not matching up. Like,
yeah,
can we talk about, like, what you actually think about this?
Yeah, let's have a conversation about having conversations.
Yeah.
Which actually is a conversation that many people are conversing about in Ontario around the new U-turn on a back turn on sex education.
This whole thing was confusing. Start again from the
absolutely
start.
Absolutely. So we're having a conversation.
You're bad
about
at segues.
Conversations happening
right
in Ontario.
No.
About having the conversation around consent.
Oh,
so
don't dig down to get out of a hole.
Doug Ford said he'd roll back the sex ed.
And there you go.
You discussed this before with Bradley.
Yeah.
But they've now U-turned on that, saying, well, of course, we're going to keep conversations in there about consent.
Yeah.
about gender identity and, mm-hmm. And sort of all of that jazz.
Well, that's the crazy thing. Because remember when we first reported on this, would have been, I think, the fall, when early fall, almost a year ago, either way, when the new sex ed program under Kathleen Wynne came out, and everybody was so, you know, upset that they're going to teach them how to masturbate. And then we actually, like, I actually looked up the PDF of the proposed changes, and it wasn't that they were going to teach them how
like
to masturbate.
It was like infographic how-to guides,
it
you know.
It wasn't like a video. It was basically like masturbation, semicolon, it happens. That was the lesson. Like, it's, same thing, homosexuality was the gays, semicolon, they're out there. If you're one of them, groovy, baby. That's it. That was like, it was one lesson in the entire thing. That like, if you are into people who are the same bits as you, that's cool, man. That's it. That was the lesson.
Mm-hmm.
But it was, you know, it's most governments these days have a really bad time with like communication.
Communication.
So there's been a lot of times where you read notes or whatever from the government or... you know, memos about some change that's going to happen, and you clutch the pearls, oh dear God, what are they doing? And then you actually read the original document, and you're like, oh, that's it? And it's just that it's been badly reported.
Headlines, yeah. Absolutely. Well, if we had a dollar for every badly written headline, I would lose count of all of the dollars.
Right?
I could buy a newspaper with all of the dollars. Which
hopefully
I think,
a better written one.
I think the going rate is like $200 now for a paper. Like, they're not doing good business. Anyway, we're going to jump to a song. I'm actually kind of feeling like featuring some folks out of Vancouver.
Okay.
So the folks over at CITR... we don't broadcast out of CITR, but we are over at CGSF in Burnaby.
Okay.
And the folks over in CITR, they're teaming up with local Pride folks to create Pride Tongue Tied, which is a queer music showcase.
Okay.
Which is pretty exciting. And actually, we spoke about this when we were in Fredericton and we did the live show there a few weeks back. I think it was last month.
Right.
And Madeline had... pointed out how exciting this is going to be. But anyway, it's coming up. They've released the lineup. We're going to play a song by a few of the artists just to help push it. It's sort of indie underground. It's not your Tegan and Sarah's or...
Well, it would have been,
you know,
Tegan and Sarah's first album.
Absolutely, yeah. Early stuff.
Because they started off indie.
This is so true.
Yeah.
Well, anyways, we're going to kick it off with the first track, which is by... Sorry Edith, from their EP Goodbye Frida.
That's the name of their band?
Sorry Edith.
That's delightful.
I think it does look delightful. And they're a great sounding band. I've listened through to a few of theirs now. And actually, my favorite from their EP is Boredom is Beauty. So we're going to put that one on.
Mm-hmm.
I was going to actually play a new track by Years and Years because I adore... Years and Years, but they're British, and
that's
we're gonna
Ollie Murs,
absolutely. Okay, no, yeah. Ollie Murs is the other guy.
The other, ooh.
Is it Ollie Alexander? Oh. Is that him? It is Ollie something. There can't be that many Ollies in the world, is there?
Well, I mean, it's short for Oliver, so I would imagine there's quite a few. No,
Ollie Alexander. Yeah, I was right. I totally have to Google it. And I think his name is actually Ollie. I don't think it's Oliver. I think it's just Ollie.
Well, I mean,
I like that name, Ollie.
It's like Chuck is short for Charles.
You know, I quite like the name Owain. O-W-A-I-N.
Well, that's just the
Welsh
name.
Yeah. It's like the Welsh name for Owen.
When I was a kid, we had a cat named Beasley.
Beasley.
And
wow.
I think that's a very like noble name, although that cat was not a very noble cat.
I've spoken about Geraint before. I quite like that name. That's got a nice ring to it. It's kind of like a regal name, Geraint.
It sounds like Geraint, which is a kind of a verb.
This is true. Anyway, this is Boredom is Beauty by Edith off the EP Goodbye Friday. Mm. If you're in Vancouver, catch them live at Pride Tongue Tied, and we'll be back just after this.
Ground only
Welcome back to Cancria, home of Canada's queer media. My name is still actually Luke Smith.
And I've just become Sebastian.
You have this past moment
yes.
become Sebastian.
I used to be
That's
Sebastian.
That's quite ethereal, isn't it? It's but like now you I'm have become him.
The most weirdly profound thing I've ever seen. There's a movie. It's called Norwegian Ninja.
Mm-hmm.
And it's better than it sounds. Weirdly enough, it's based on actual historical events.
Is it a ninja who is Norwegian?
It is an entire troop of ninjas.
Oh my days.
Under the direct command of the King of Norway. And there's a scene where the ninjas
actually?
Yeah. And there's it's weird, but I recommend the movie if you like camp. And there's a scene where all the ninjas are sitting around a campfire and one of them says, get me the best hot dog on the grill. And then the ninja master, who's already achieved enlightenment, says to him, there is no best. Every hot dog on every grill, every day in every life is the best. And then the guy who asked for the hot dog achieved enlightenment and his head started to glow. It was hilarious, but like also kind of like, yeah, and it's really weird, but I actually kind of, it sank in as this hilarious, like pseudo-profound nonsense that, I don't know, what's the best? Everything is the best. Every moment of every day is the best. Kind of. It's kind of Panglossian, if you know the reference.
No.
It's a literary thing. Whatever. No. Moving on.
Yeah.
Hot dogs.
Norwegian ninjas.
Yeah,
the more you know.
Yeah, and it was a hilarious movie. It's really good.
Well, we're moving into conversations now that are not quite as hilarious. And that actually relates to Intimate Partner Violence.
Yay!
Actually, definitely boo. Yeah. If you are affected by the following conversation regarding Intimate Partner Violence, please reach out to your local victim services. They will know the right people to talk to. Or a distress center. They're also very, very good people to talk to.
Or talk to anyone. A lot of people just don't talk to anyone about what's happening to them.
This is true.
Reach out to a friend or a neighbor or someone you trust.
Communicate.
Exactly.
Communicate, communicate. Absolutely. So important. It comes up a lot. We should get paid by communication. I think we would make a killing that way.
Can we get sponsored by the concept of communication?
Brought to you this week by Talk Radio, brought to you by Communication. I think that could be a thing. I reckon I could hashtag that. If you manage the assets of communication, please let us know. Anyway, moving on. So there is a report in Men's Health Network, which is the American Journal of Men's Health, published an article called The Dyadic Reporting of Intimate Partner Violence Among Male Couples in Three U.S. Cities. So it is American, and I bring it up. We don't usually talk about Americans, but what this study found, and then I'll explain why it's important in the Canadian context, is what this study found, and this may surprise people, but gay men experience intimate partner violence. Mm-hmm. So that's just another term for domestic violence or domestic abuse. Mm-hmm. At a rate that is pretty similar to how women experience domestic violence as opposed to how men experience domestic violence. So the stats are quite different. So the study identified rates of intimate partner violence with 33% of men experiencing emotional violence, 23% experiencing physical violence, and 10% sexual violence. And those numbers were comparable to women. Mm-hmm. And for straight men, they noted significantly lower rates. Now there is conversations around, you know, did the straight men that they talk to actually feel like disclosing?
Yeah.
And, you know, what is that part of the conversation?
Yeah.
And it is important to know that for many reasons, sort of being emasculated, straight men don't usually want to disclose. And it's also not being able to identify certain behaviors as having been domestic violence.
Well, usually they get around that by not just straight up asking, like, have you experienced domestic abuse, or have you experienced sexual violence or something like that, because they know that there's, I mean, even within like social work and social sciences, victimology, different branches, different methodologies, different periods in history will have different definitions. So usually what they do is they just list like a whole bunch of things. Has this happened to you? And you just check, you know, have you been pushed? Have you been insulted? Have you been yelled at? Have you been? And then you just tick, 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 tick. And then in your mind, if you're like, well, you know, that's what happens in couples, and it doesn't occur to you that that might not be healthy behavior, you don't have to actually disclose whether or not you've been a victim of abuse or not. You just tick, 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 yes, I have, and then they roll with it. And then it's not really a matter of, I mean, you could not disclose that those things happened to you, but you're not really ticking off the general concept. Have you experienced, you know, financial manipulation? People may not know what that encompasses, because it's actually pretty complicated stuff. So just has the following things happened to you, yes or no, tick, 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 and then they crunch the numbers for you.
Absolutely. Well, this study looked at 320 men, 160 couples, and they found that these rates were much higher. Now,
that's not a fantastic sample
size. It's not a great sample size, and this is actually where I bring in the Canadian context.
It's not terrible either, though. It's a very, very, very good start. This is the kind of like pilot study that you would easily get very good funding for a good study afterwards. Mm-hmm. It's very good indicative numbers, though.
Absolutely. And they were in Atlanta, Boston, Chicago. And so anyway, that's the states.
Boston,
in
Chicago. Those are all cities with strong lower class, like there a lot of poverty.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, that might be a conflating factor. If they go to, like, Silicon Valley and you know, the burbs of New York City, they're going to get different numbers, probably. And they should do that anyway.
Well, in Canada, we actually have information from all of the police-reported numbers, which are, you know, grain of salt, to say the least. We know rates of incidents and how people define things. And we know, you know, from information that's quite old now, that male same-sex domestic violence is extremely violent. So where, you know, it's brutal.
Mm-hmm.
It's sort of hyper-violent in some ways. Like, you don't come out looking pretty at the end of it. Not that you come out looking pretty at the end of any domestic violence, but there's more broken bones and blood than the average that one would expect. Mm-hmm. And that's conversations around toxic masculinity, which is masculinity that is sort of hyped up and extra violent, and sort of all of those things are all, and that's a different conversation from
I've actually been witness to a couples that were separated because one of them was in hospital and the police put a peace bond on them, whether the victim liked it or not. And I wouldn't say that it was toxic masculinity. I would say it was internalized homophobia.
That certainly plays a role, yeah.
Didn't like the fact that he was in a gay couple, to which you'd be like, well, then why are you in a couple?
And that other person represents what they hate about themselves. Yeah. And it kind of, it escalates. And homophobia plays a role within that. Anyways, the reason why I bring it up is because Stats Canada is currently undergoing a survey of public safety. That's how they've coined it. And I was thinking, oh, this is going to be questions about being mugged in the street.
Yeah.
Or ram raiding or something. You know, I was thinking...
Ram raiding?
Yeah, that's when people... Do you feel safe with people driving onto streets, like in the incident in Toronto?
Oh, right, okay.
And I was like, oh, maybe it's like, are people affected by terrorism conversation? And it was kind of... There was... I did it recently. There was conversations around, you know, have you been assaulted or attacked by somebody you didn't know? Well, I don't think it was about whether or not you didn't know. It was somebody other than intimate partner.
Right.
They're like isolated your partners and family and then everybody else.
Right.
And then you do the everybody else one. So you're familiar with the questions. You're like, oh, okay, yeah. This happened. Yeah. Thinking back to that time that thing happened, did you feel like this? And it was all... It was all in there.
There's a strong history of studying crime in terms of whether or not you know your attacker or not.
Mm.
Because, like, there's a while in the mid-90s when the city of Bogota, which is, like, the capital of Colombia. Is it the capital of Colombia or just the largest city? No, I think it's the largest city and the capital. I don't know. I'm just so used to living in Canada where Ottawa, which is basically a large village, it happens to be the capital. It's really weird. Anyway, so Bogota... was the world leader in rates of being attacked by someone you didn't know, which is really weird because in the grand scheme of crime, usually you know your assailant.
In Canada, it's like kidnapping is issued by somebody known to them and fraud.
Exactly.
Well, maybe not fraud, but it's like there's a lot of crimes, especially violent crime.
Yeah.
And... that's done by somebody you know.
Exactly. But when the rate of crime where you know and you don't know the assailant is about the same rate, like, that's not a good sign.
So the questions that Stats Canada also looking at then moved into interpartner violence.
Right.
You know, have you experienced from any of your previous partners or your existing one any of these behaviors?
Mm-hmm.
You know, did this happen or this happen? Tick all that apply. And if you tick something, there's follow-up questions. And I think that's really interesting because Stats Canada is doing an update on data that's actually quite old now.
Yeah.
We do have some old data. And I think if you look at when people were answering these questions before...
To be fair to Stats Can, there was that six-year period where they were basically defunded.
That's absolutely true. And I don't blame Stats Canada for being out in the cold.
Yeah.
I blame Stephen Harper.
Right.
So I've got a cough there. For putting them out in the cold. You know, and it's important because what that means is that there's a major gap in us knowing. Attitudes have changed in Canada. People are more willing to have these conversations than they've ever been before.
Education has changed. People are more capable of spotting it. They're less likely to say things like, well, you know, that's just what happens in couples. Like, they're more willing to be like, yeah, but that's not healthy.
Absolutely.
You know?
Absolutely. And, you know, there's still barriers to seeking out services. There's still lots of places in Canada that are service deserts where the help... frankly isn't there for certain demographics. And you know, these things will come out, but what I was really excited about doing this survey, because we're the kind of people that get excited about surveys.
Was it steak?
It was not steak.
Okay.
But what I got excited about is I am really excited to know what the data at the end will show.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I'm reading questions going like, ooh, I'd love to know what everybody else has said. Like, ooh, honey, is that What's the rate?
See, for me, what's most interesting is what's called the cross tabulations.
Ooh.
So it's not just who answered the question, but like who answered this question, but also answered that question as well. And then if you said yes on this question and this question, like, you know, is it predominantly men? Is it predominantly women? What age group? What income bracket? Mm-hmm. And it's that all that secondary stuff and how things interact with each other, because it could be something really weird, like, you know, couples that never experience intimate partner violence ever eat a lot of grapefruit.
I mean, grapefruit wasn't one of the questions, but things like immigration status was
right
on
okay
there. Country of birth was on there. If you're indigenous or Métis was on there. Mm-hmm. Your age is on there. The age difference between within couples was all on there. You know, if you're with somebody, what's their age? What's your age? So they can look at intergenerational relationships if they wanted to, which would be super interesting.
Right.
You know, trans folks in and out of relationships, what they're doing. I'm like, oh, the data points. Very exciting. Yeah, so it'll be probably like a year or so before we get any of this information back to us. But exciting stuff that, you know, we hear these 300-person surveys in the States. I'm like, But we're actually, Canada is currently, right now, today, doing this major survey.
Yeah.
So if you got a letter in the mail, and I actually got two because we were too slow at doing it. I did Google to see whether or not we have to do it. But if you, I was like, am I going to get like a knock on the door with the RCMP officer being like, excuse me, you haven't filled out your survey. But no, I was looking in, and it's voluntary, but we were going to do it. And I got a follow-up letter being like, please, sir, shift your bat.
Yeah.
But if you also got this letter randomly in the mail, check your mail, first of all, it might be there. Please do it, because this is information that is so vitally important.
It helps
and
everyone.
And the more people that participate, even if you're like, have you ever been attacked in the street? The answer is no. And you answer, all of them, no. Well, you represent a whole bunch of people
that's still
to
data.
Whom that's never happened. Yeah. Absolutely.
That's actually one of the, this is one of the things that the Mythbusters got right. Even a failure is still data.
Absolutely.
No, and not that you're a failure if you've never been a victim of crime. Even zero data is still data. There you go.
Absolutely. Yeah. So anyway, this week's episode is brought to you by Stats Canada. I'm just kidding. We get no money from them.
And communication.
And the ethereal entity of communication and the letter Q are all things that bring you this week's episode.
And the number 12.
We're going to play Pale Red's, a song from Heavy Petting by the band Pale Red.
Okay.
We're also going to be at this live event in Vancouver. If you can't make it, listen to their music. They're going to be amazing on record. They are amazing live. Great opportunity. Anyway, we're going to go with Leave Any Room, which is one of the tracks that I rather enjoyed. And they are a Vancouver-based group, as per the selection for today. And we'll be back just after this. This is Leave Any Room from the album Heavy Petting by Pale Red. Hello and welcome back to Can Queer. I still believe I am actually Luke Smith.
I have forgotten whether or not my name is Sebastian.
Actually, we say that, and it actually reminds me of a study that I read recently looking at a possible cause of Alzheimer's. And they reckon that it's actually...
A childhood virus.
Hepatitis.
Mm.
One of the heps, actually, is mm-hmm. what it was. And it's because... It triggers the ability to produce some enzyme in the brain, and that sort of, it overproduces it, and it yeah. builds up a plaque, and the plaque is what actually causes yep. the issue. So yeah, apparently it may or may not be the HEP that does it.
I've heard about this, yeah.
But it's not just the HEP, because sometimes people also just genetically overproduce this enzyme. So it's not necessarily just hepatitis, but there is a link.
Yeah. And
we may or may not know.
It was a couple years ago when they started looking at this, when they realized that the distribution pattern of Alzheimer's was similar to shingles, which is a infancy disease coming back in your old age. And it's the same thing. So if you get infected before a certain age, then it goes dormant, and then it shows up again as Alzheimer's.
Well, I think in this case, what they're saying is that it sort of overproduces something that builds up a plaque in the brain. And the buildup of plaque, when you hit, you know, it is what causes the Alzheimer's. So it's sort of, it's a gradual increase. I may be misremembering. We'll find the study, post it on our website, www.canqueer.news. And you can find out all the information you want. Now, what is also news and a study is that apparently men don't always want sex.
I mean...
And this is actual news from a news site.
Any man who has just been victim of the squirts on account of they ate something what they should not have eaten, they don't want sex for, you know, a while.
Mm-hmm.
Because
we're referring to diarrhea.
Yeah. And so, I mean, at least fathom.
It's hard to feel sexy with diarrhea.
Right? And so you would imagine that at least during
that. Like if you got glutened.
Oh, man.
Oh, you're out.
Oh, yeah, no.
Game over for like 3 days.
That last three. Because I remember, because Luke, for the audience, is benefit. Luke and I used to live together, and I remember the first time I accidentally got glutened, and then I was rolling around on the floor, and then you walked past the bathroom, and you're like, who did what in there? And I was like, yeah, that was me. I accidentally ate a gluten, and you're like, oh my god, you weren't exaggerating. I was like, yeah, no. It's like you eat death, and it comes out as hot acid.
This is true.
Yeah.
More death on the
more
other
death
side.
On the other side.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
We had to bring in the hazmat team that day. It was quite a thing.
I'm very comfortable with my body. I'm just realizing right now. Although I've known this for a while, but
this
I'm
is true.
Also talking about
anyway,
this on my there.
So the reason why this is a news story is because in the issue of Social Forces, which is a journal, you can find it on, we're looking at it at Oxford Academic, and it sort of made its way into the world of media now. Anyway, they did a study, and what they looked at was actually 39 men.
Mm-hmm.
Let me just try and double check that number here.
Again, 39 is not a great sample number.
No, it's not a great sample number at all. But it was 39. So this interviewer, PhD student at New York University, it was Jesse Ford, interviewed 39 college-age men, yet again, college-age men, and asked them, it wasn't all just white men, so that's a step in the right direction. Asked them about their experiences around having sex. And of course, the reason why she was doing this research is because everybody's looking at the Me Too movement and unwanted sex with women, or where women have experienced unwanted sex. And what they found was that men also, you know, during the Me Too, some people on Twitter were also posting who are men about having experienced unwanted sex. So she kind of drilled down on some of the reasons why with these 39 men. And one of the things that came up, which I thought was quite interesting, was that they're all straight men.
Right.
One of the things they found that was, let's say you're at a party and some girl comes up to you and goes, oh my God, I think you're really cute. And it kind of escalates from there. And they're like, do you want to go upstairs? I don't know how girls hook up with guys. I've never experienced that.
There's a harness.
There's a harness. There's hooks.
There's gear involved. And there's this thing from the ceiling.
I think they include aubergines. And I think that's also included.
No, that's the morning after.
That's the morning aubergines. That's for breakfast. Yeah. Got it right.
Clearly, we know everything about the
heterosex. We know all of the things.
Yeah.
Anyway, so this lady is approaching somebody, and they just don't want to have sexual intercourse that day. But one of the reasons, or some of the reasons given by these folks, is that the men that she interviewed, is that there's a sort of social expectancy.
Yeah.
You know, why aren't you trying to hook up with women?
Yeah.
Like, what's wrong with you? Are you unmanly?
There's also,
are
like,
you gay for not constantly wanting to have sex with women?
Maybe you do want to, but not right now. So you feel like if you don't do it right now, then you won't have the chance later.
I don't think that came up as much as sort of the heteronormativity.
I have definitely seen this with gay men where they're like, I wanted to, but it was like, this is especially common on first dates. Like guys who are like, I never put out on first dates. And then you talk to them and you realize they always put out on first dates. And it's because they don't want to, but they feel like if they say no, then the other person will be crushed and will never ask them again.
Yeah, so they're like, oh my gosh, you're just a prude, and or move on.
Yeah.
Or maybe they don't want to have sex with me because it's me. Mm. Is there something wrong with me? And then they move on.
So you sort of hesitantly have tepid sex with them to make them feel inspired ask you again.
Yeah.
So that in 2 weeks' time,
even though you didn't want it.
Yeah.
So that's unwanted sexual intercourse.
Or you do, just not yet.
So one of the things that these men were saying is that, you know, one of the guys said that, you know, even afterwards, I'd say thank you, even though at no point did I actually want to have sex.
Yeah.
But I want to be the man that wants to have sex.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's expected. It'd be weird if I didn't.
Mm-hmm.
And that sort of social pressure is what is sort of pushing down. And yeah, a lot of them were talking about how that sort of, she noticed the pattern consistently coming up, that this unwanted sexual things happened. You know, not necessarily was it women going around with a giant butterfly net and capturing men and hauling them off.
It doesn't
work. I don't know if there's any incidents of that happening.
I've tried. It doesn't work.
I thought I saw you on Rideau Street with a butterfly net. But no, that's not really what's happening. But they're conforming or sort of saying no isn't really an option is sort of where this conversation is going.
Yeah.
And I think that introducing that nuance where it's women there's been advocates for talking about how there needs to be clear, consistent, and sort of enthusiastic yes.
Yeah.
You need to be, yes, I want this. Yes, I want that to happen.
Mm-hmm.
Now that we've started, do you still want it to happen? Yes. Maybe checking in. Are you still in a good place for this to be happening? Yes. Or if no, then you stop. Clear, consistent, enthusiastic. That's what like the goal is. Hashtag asking goals. And, you know, but what we're seeing is that these men are like, okay, well, I don't want to say no.
Mm.
I should say yes. That's what men do. In fact, men go, hell yeah. And if I don't say that, then why am I not into it?
Oh, I don't, which is partly why I have troubles dating. Because I just say to people, yeah, I don't put out on the first date. And like, okay. And then, you know, then after a while, they're like, you want to go back to my place? I'm like, when I said I don't put on the first date, I actually meant it. And then they take it personally.
You were just being coy.
And then there's no second date because they think I don't like them. And then later on I run into them and they're like, you didn't like me. And it's like, I liked you just fine. I just didn't put out on the first date. And it was this whole thing. It's happened to me more than once. But no, it's I have learned that I don't enjoy it with someone I don't know well. And I know a lot of guys who feel that way where they're like, I will be all up in that biz for like 6 hours straight after I've gotten to know them.
Absolutely. And it's not, I think that's also a nuance that we're starting to see with all men.
Yeah.
Or with straight men as well.
Yeah.
Is that, you know, sexual intercourse. And this is actually really interesting because I was watching The View. Whoopi is my favorite. That's pretty much why I watch it, actually, is Whoopi.
I like every so often when she takes the stance you wouldn't expect her to take.
Yeah.
And you're like, really? You're going to defend that? Like, I agree with you, but I never would have thought you would have defended that.
I love the fact that Whoopi never calls Trump president. She's always like the guy in the White House.
Yeah,
it's great. Anyway, I was watching The View and they were talking about The Bachelorette and the fact that, or The Bachelor, the fact that The Bachelor revealed in a shocking twist that he was a virgin, that he was just busy as a pro football player, and everyone's like, what?
Yeah,
and there was a conversation around.
You don't lie about that kind of thing.
It's like, really?
Yeah.
But the conversation was, is it socially acceptable to be a virgin and a pro football player, or a sort of a man in a role that one expects to be sexually active, a college kid in New York, you know, how much of an expectation is there? Half the women on The View were like, I don't believe it. I reckon he was lying. Oh, that's ridiculous. And maybe it's a church, it's a religious thing.
Yeah.
You know, but it's sort of a conversation around expectation of male sexuality.
Yeah.
And this study, although with only 39 men, kind of drilled down into that a little bit.
So is this that she, because 39 doesn't sound like a lot, unless she asked like 1,000 men and then she interviewed the 39 men who said yes, at which point those numbers are good.
So, yeah, no, there were 39 men who had reported unwanted sex with women.
Okay, but she surveyed way more than that.
I don't know how many people she surveyed, but it was the sample that she spoke to about this was 39 men.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's not so
which
bad.
Which is a pretty decent number.
That's not that bad, especially if she's doing more of a, like, an interview
style. A sort
of
qualitative report.
Yeah.
Now, somebody who we actually had a bit of a disagreement about earlier, and this is the last story maybe, although I do want to note before we wrap up the India story, the Supreme Court in India may or may not have a conversation about whether or not homosexuality should
I really
be a thing.
Wish we could have more to say about it, but it's basically they're thinking about maybe considering opening up the case. Okay.
Well, it's actually hearing the case.
Okay.
So in the past, the Supreme Court has kicked it to government or just like chosen not to address it. So now it's a big deal that they may address it.
Right.
But
and I've tried to look up, like, you know, like, what's the public perception? What's the public reception? What do people think about it? And I'm having troubles finding any information.
We will have more on this when it becomes more of a story.
Mm.
Big news, though, Lebanon decriminalized homosexuality.
Oh, good.
So that's quite exciting news out of the Middle East.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, just news happening everywhere. But we don't have time. So I want to talk about Porn Star.
Oh.
And I want to talk about Blake Mitchell. And you read more about this story than I did. I mainly looked at it because it was like a headline clickbait thing on QWERTY.
Well, it's more that back when I was in the gay bar, I actually met somebody who was a former adult model. And this conversation I've heard before.
Professional actor. Anyway.
Yes.
So Blake Mitchell.
A gentleman cinema performer.
Absolutely. Blake Mitchell recently put out a video around being lonely. And it's talking about sort of difficulties in dating and connecting with other men. And and I was like, boo-hoo, you know, wealthy, beautiful man, West Hollywood life. Like, what, you know, it's just like, what more could you need?
Well, we don't know what his income is. But anyway, the point is, like, and I understand what you're saying. And I part of me is also that
for me, it's like white tears. I'm like, really? You're crying about that? Like,
partly I feel the same, but like, I still, if somebody has a problem, I have compassion for them, basically, because I feel like you ought to. How much compassion you have, that's a different issue. But like, he is having troubles, and it's not that he's having troubles getting laid, because he just goes to work, and then he meets some of the most gorgeous men in America. Well, I mean, gorgeous boys, because most of them are like 18 to 25 in America, and to which he does all sorts of nasty things to their body, and vice versa.
And gets paid for the pleasure.
And gets paid for it. But that's not what he's complaining about. What he's complaining about is that he has no one to go home to, because whenever he dates, people don't, they're not comfortable with the fact that he's having sex with all sorts of other people all the time. Or, you know, they get jealous, they get insecure, they don't understand why he's with them because he could have anyone, but actually, I mean, it's the same thing that happens. There's a lot of studies about women who are like top shelf, like 10 out of 10. I know the term is sexist, but we'll just use that because it's an accepted thing. But like 10 out of 10 women have a horrible time dating because everyone's intimidated by them. You know, no, everyone just assumes they're too good for them, so they go for the 8s and 9s. Well, you know, they also deserve people, and it's not just the other 10s, because, I don't know, maybe he's super into, you know, brainy nerdy guys or something. I don't know.
Well, it makes me think of Tom Daly, actually, and how Tom Daly is dating Dustin Lance Black, okay. The Canadian.
No, that's somebody else
Elton
is dating
John,
him.
Isn't it? Yeah, and I'm thinking about, no. No, I think both Tom Daly and Elton John are dating Canadians.
Dustin Lance Black is the only gay celebrity to have a sex tape leak. And I remember it came out in the mid-2000s and everybody was like, oh, because in the video he was having unprotected sex.
No, it is Dustin Lance Black.
Really?
Yeah, I was right. Oh, see,
Tom Daly is dating him?
Oh, and he's American. I thought he was Canadian. Anyway.
No, I already know.
But yeah, no. So, my point is that Tom Daly is dating somebody who's very secure in a completely different line of work.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's like they're doing well in their own thing.
But sort neither of them...
The Ellen DeGeneres and Portia de Grassi.
Neither of them are being paid to have sex on camera, though.
This is true.
Yeah. And this is the complaint, that it's hard to meet people.
I don't know, because
for
I
intimacy,
think,
not just for screwing around.
I don't know. I feel like there are ways, like maybe not Grindr, you know, maybe not West Hollywood. I am certain that there are normal gay men who would like to go for a coffee, and, you know,
most of them would probably just be interested in free sex with a porn star, though.
Yeah, but
they'll
then
take them out on a couple dates, get their thrills, and then.
But you get a sense for that, wouldn't you? I mean, I don't know. Maybe if you are a porn star in Canada and have some insights into what dating is like.
They'd be in Montreal.
You're on one side of this conversation. I'm like, I don't know. I feel like he's looking in the wrong places.
Like, I feel for the guy. Like, there are gay men out there who can't get laid, they can't get a date, they can't make friends. Like, gay loneliness is a real problem.
It really is.
So the fact that he at least has friends and sex partners, the fact that he's missing the third element, like, I do understand your boohoo approach to it, but it is, like, just because he has great things does not mean
that all of his things are great.
Exactly, yeah. So, I mean, I feel
I mean,
for the guy.
I suppose you're right, and I should be more sympathetic. You know, I am actually very proud of Jonathan Van Ness, who is the wonderful hairdresser from Game of Thrones, and, of course, Queer Eye for the Straight Guy, which is, I'm super excited for the next season. But is very open about battling psychotic depression, speaks freely very often on his podcast about struggles with mental health and acceptance in the gay community and depression and so on and so forth. And having these candid conversations, because it creates a role model moment. And maybe Blake Mitchell being lonely and him being like the A of the A gays.
Yeah.
Allows other gay men to go, okay, yeah, maybe my loneliness is a thing that it happens to everybody.
Yeah.
But I still think...
For a moment there, I was going to say, you know, he should start some kind of a Me Too thing. And I was like, no, that's already out there. Maybe Also Me or something like that.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. If him and Dan Savage got into a room, just like, there'd be a whole campaign happening.
I mean, Dan Savage, when gorgeous, successful, hunky, famous, wealthy people say that it can get better.
And this is my Mitchell issue. It's like, you know,
Harvey Fierstein in the 80s, because he had a rough childhood.
No, Harvey Weinstein.
No, Harvey Fierstein, because he was like, oh, it's not that bad. Like, that I could get behind. Like, you know, you can weather through it. That was, his approach was not, it'll get better. It was, you can weather through it, you're tough. I think is a much better message, and from him, I would believe it.
I watched a great interview with Alan Carr, UK chat show host, with Gok Wan, who is a famous fashion designer who's going into food and many other things. And he's like, I grew up in a council estate in like Chatham, like, yeah. It's, you know, or Leeds or whatever it was, and just literally like the low of low,
yeah,
not expected to be much, worked in his dad's Chinese restaurant, yeah. Like, just, and yet is rolling into Parliament to talk about body images, you know, body image issues, and he's like, you know, people like that, I'm like, okay, I get it, I can see the rags to riches story, and but still being real and down to earth, still Jenny from the block. You know what I mean?
But, oh man, that's, I don't know, 2001.
Am I dehumanizing Blake Mitchell? Is Blake Mitchell a symbol of gay loneliness? Let us know what you think at TalkCanQueer. Who's right? Who's wrong? Is there really a right or wrong answer to this? I don't even know. But we've run out of time.
Okay.
I've been Luke Smith.
And I've been Sebastian.
And this is from the album Late Bloomers by Devours, who are also playing out in the Vancouver Pride Tongue Tied. Check it out. This is Jazz by Four, which is the song.
Okay.
And we'll be back next week.
Thanks for listening, everyone.
Someone new to caress your ego. Somebody.